Alan Kring Productions, in association with the Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, review for the final, part two. This is the side of it where we have you ask me questions about the final exam, and that should give you some chance to learn a little more, get some things consolidated in your mind, get some information about what might not be on, what would not be on the final, and all that. Now, I do, Friday, there will be one last quiz. Generally, that quiz has some very specific questions that are directed at knowing what will be on the final. In other words, let me not be circumspect about this. Those questions, I tend to make it so that you're seeing like a mini preview of some of the finals on that last quiz. This weekend, and I'll send out a message. I'll have a Zoom session on Saturday late afternoon, early evening, about an hour, if you want to come in and ask a few last-minute questions just to get any final details ready. And then the final exam is next week, 7:50 a.m. on Wednesday. And then from there, once you get that done, you can wander off into the night. I will try to have the grades take me a couple of days to get everything consolidated, so you should be able to see your final grades in VeggieNet by the end of the weekend. I have to do all the transfer grades back and forth because it's not automatic. VeggieNet doesn't do things very automatically. I have to transfer grades over from Cengage and all that kind of stuff, but it'll all be there for you to see your grades come up. Sunday I'll have it because I have to get them up to the university server early next week. So that's something to look forward to as well. But one last time, and this is material that is on the final, is asking questions about what you have been seeing in these charts over the course of this semester when I've shown you all these different things. As you can see right now, we have a bull rally going on. We had some just an absolute slaughterhouse for more than a few days there. The Dow just kept all of the indices were going down, and then it cooled off yesterday somewhat. And now, as you can see, we have across the board the bulls are taking over. A lot of that might be bargain hunting, as they say, buy on the dip. In other words, once things go down far enough, start buying again. Of course, the real key is always timing. Okay, when should you start buying? Well, if you start buying too soon, obviously you might get killed if the market continues to drive down. But we do have a rally going on. As you can see, the Dow is up. The Dow and the S&P are up look at that. All three of the indices are up about the same amount. Now, that's a little unusual. The Dow and the Standard & Poor's 500 and the NASDAQ Exchange are all about up the same. The Dow is up a little bit less. That would be expected. It's a lower risk portfolio. And the S&P is up a little more than that. Right about with the NASDAQ today. So apparently there's kind of a positive sentiment. One of those regrets that we beat it down so much and now we're going to buy some stuff to make up for it. Kind of like that. I wouldn't take that too seriously, but we did have a lot of correction downward. The information was that it was negative information for a few days. Fed is going to raise interest rates pretty strongly. It's going to get really tough on inflation as quickly as it can. And then, of course, we have over here crude oil. It wants to stay above $100 a barrel. It's having a hard time doing that, though. But you will see some more activity in the hydrocarbons markets over the next couple of weeks as you see Russia starting to do two things. One is it's cutting off natural gas to countries in other countries in Eastern Europe. Likely it'll start cutting off natural gas to more countries. And two, Russia is deciding that it's going to expand the war. It's going after the country of Moldova, and specifically the Transdniestria region. So the war is expanding. And it's sort of almost like slow motion World War III. But that, of course, gets the markets kind of interested, and they keep an eye on that situation, too. Because if it keeps expanding, that's going to cut supplies of critical infrastructure, critical needs like hydrocarbons. And if we start seeing attacks on oil refineries, oil storage depots in places around Eastern Europe, well, that's going to really throw the price of crude oil upward. Right now, it's fairly quiet, though. Going over here, as you can see, the money that is going into equities looks like some of that, at least, is coming out of metals. Investors selling metals and using the proceeds to go into stocks. Now, interestingly, you see the bond market up, the yields up about a little more than 2 basis points, which means that prices are going down. So investors are getting out of bonds, they're getting out of metals, and they're putting the money into equities. So this is not just a one-off little rally. This is investors kind of flowing back toward the riskier securities. And we'll see how that goes over the next few days. But right now, that's kind of good news. It doesn't mean we're not going to have a recession, but it's not going to be anytime soon. Even London. Now, interestingly, last night, when you look at Tokyo, when you look at Japan, the Nikkei 225, that happened last night. And as you can see, through last night, which was their day, the Nikkei was climbing out of negative territory. It never made it completely, but you see that climbing out. And then later last night and into today, the London market was showing continuation of that rally. There was a drop here, but it was still a good rally. And now we're in the sunlight of the United States, and the rally is going here too. So in other words, you're watching a clock. As the clock goes around the world, the rally is moving with it around the world. Sometimes you see that. It's actually kind of an interesting thing, seeing a wave of sentiment moving across the planet. And that's what you're seeing here. Started with more positivity in Japan as they climbed out of negative, came over to London, and then here we are in the United States feeling that same love, whatever that's worth. But do know that when I'm doing a final exam, I don't do really tight testing. Well, what did the NASDAQ do last week? But I do ask you for the general understanding of the consensus of traders, what you generally see happening, where the indexes are to a certain extent. Well, what is the price right now approximately of oil? Is it 70, 80, 90, 100, 120? So I might ask you something in a little bit of detail, but nothing really specific about the markets. And if you're interested in continuing this, by all means, we have other finance classes where you can enjoy more of this kind of work. And I've found that over the years, although people don't much care for the math sometimes, they find investments to be something that is actually kind of fascinating. It's one of the better parts of this course, one of the more fun parts of this course. But anyway, coming over here, just to have a look at the sadness, the yield curve is just not, it's staying inverted on the 7-10-year leg. So there you are. It's just not going to give us any happiness at all. I suspect that it's going to probably come out of that inversion on the 7-10 within the next two weeks, but it already inverted, so we do have a recession coming. Notwithstanding the people who are saying, don't worry, we won't have a recession. Yeah, it's coming. So there's that. Okay, now, it is your turn to ask me questions about the final exam. Whatever you want to ask, Don't ask me what are the answers. I won't do that, but I'll try to be as specific as I can with respect to the information that I give you. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. The Federal Reserve's monetary. Get my throat by here. The question, and I'm going to repeat your question so that it's here on the microphone on the podcast. The tools of monetary policy that the Fed has, it can always change the amount of reserves, the required reserve ratio, the amount of money, highly liquid assets that banks in the system have to keep in their vaults. Obviously, if they keep more money, if the Fed increases the required reserve ratio, that would slow down the money. That would slow down the growth of the money supply. So, but that one is a meat axe. It's not used very often at all, just because it is so blunt. Okay, every bank hold $1 billion more. Well, that would certainly cause a lot of excitement. So that one is the least used. One that is used 8 times a year, and it possibly could be used more than that if the Fed felt it was necessary, that is the discount rate, the rate at which the Fed will lend money to member banks. That's done 8 times a year. Now, in a normal time, the Fed will say, we're not changing the discount rate. And the Fed is signaling the economy, the interest rates are where we want them to be. The economy is growing at a decent rate. We don't want to mess with it. But the Fed could also raise the discount rate, saying, all right, the economy's moving too fast. It's heating up. Slow down. And then, on the other hand, it could reduce the discount rate. And that would, of course, say everyone, all banks and everything, kind of lower your rates and let's get this economy booming again. So in other words, but that one is done only 8 times a year in general. It's something that's decided at this meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee. Now, the most frequently used, and it's done every day, are the open market operations. The Fed going to banks and saying, we want to sell you treasury bills, send us money for them. That would drain liquidity, slow down the economy. On the other hand, the Fed could say, hey, we want to buy the treasury bills, some of the treasury bills at your bank, and we'll send you money. That would add liquidity to the economy and boost and juice the economy. Now, on any given day, be careful about this. It depends on which question you get it from what pool. The Fed might do both in a day. It might add and drain. It does that so that arbitragers and speculators get bluffed. Sometimes its policy is we want to put money into the economy. We want to buy treasury bills from banks and give them money in exchange to juice the economy. But in order to throw the speculators off, it might start the day by selling treasury bills to the banks to drain liquidity. So it's not a clear direction. It's an ebb and a flow in a general direction. But open market operations are the largest, are the most frequently used of the policies, of the tools of monetary policy. Is that enough for you?
The required reserve ratio changing?
No, that's the one I talked about first. It's the blunt meat axe. It's hardly ever used. Yeah, go ahead.
Do we have to know about salvage value and salvage value after taxes?
If I tell you there's a salvage value, it's one of those NPV IRR problems. If I say, and the salvage value of the project is, you add that to the last year. You put it on the end year. If I said year 5, the pre-tax free cash flow or whatever was $5,000, and the project has a salvage value of -$2,000, you would subtract that $2,000 from that $5,000, the very end year. Don't let me bluff you on that. Sometimes I'll put a question on where I'll say, well, you add that to the first year's free cash flows. don't. It's always the last years. Glad you asked that, because that's something that I kind of forget that I sometimes try to bluff people. Go.
Is there going to be any problems in the resource
I thought I had one in there. I thought I did. Give me a... Hang on here. Let me look at something real quick here. As I pull up the exam and all that kind of stuff, let me turn off. Don't you wish I'd pull it up like that? Okay, give me a second here. Let me see in the resources tab in VeggieNet if we have a, if I gave you a, annuity problems, common life analysis, financial analysis formulas, price and cost of capital, stock valuation problems. Well, the stock valuation problem kind of does that. You have to use the NPV, but there is not a direct one. I can put one up if you want. Would you want one? Okay, I can do one. It'll give me until tomorrow to put one up. It'll be just a classic, here's the free cash flow situation. Find the NPV, find the IRR. Know that I will ask that on the final. It'll just be a 1-2 punch. Here's the free cash flows. Find me the NPV. Find me the IRR. But it will be there. So I'll put up a problem for that, just so you know, just so you have one more practice shot at that. What else? Yeah.
Quiz 8.
I sure can. Matter of fact, I was over there on quiz 8, then I bailed over here. Give me a second here. Quiz 8. As a matter of fact, let me do it this way. Let me go to the draft, which has the answer key with it for quiz 8. Seriously? I have so many different question pools and everything else. Quiz 8, there we go. Okay. Okay, here you go. Quiz 8. Now, there will be something about governance. This is what we call a corporate governance kind of question. You'll have something about this. Make sure you know that the shareholders vote for the board of directors, and the board of directors then appoints, hires the executive management, okay? There will be one about this on the exam. I'll telegraph the punch right now. Just know which one those shareholders actually. And by the way, be sure you know that shareholder and stockholder are the same thing. Okay? And be careful. I can sometimes slip in the word stakeholder. If you see stakeholder, it's probably a meaningless answer. I try to do that sometimes. Okay. Stakeholder and bondholder are the owners. No, the stockholders are the owners. The bondholders are the debtors of a corporation. Stakeholders is kind of a meaningless, diffuse term. One other thing, while I'm on this, just to make sure that you know, is that what was I thinking? Come on. Stockholders have the residual claim to the cash flows. The bondholders have the prior claim. It's always on my final exam. It's always there. The stockholders have the residual claim. In other words, they get whatever's left after the bondholders have been taken care of in a timely manner. So you pay your bills, and whatever's left is yours for fun and a grand slam at Denny's. Okay. Preferred stock. Let me get up the calculator here. Whenever you have a preferred stock question, the first thing you do is calculate the dividend on the preferred stock. Now, in this case, it's telling us that it has a 2% dividend. You take the dividend times the par value to get the dividend, or the dividend percent. So it's 0.02 times the par value. And then you divide that by whatever your discount rate is for preferred. Right now, it's in this problem, it's 2.2%, so that's 0.022. Be sure, again, if you're doing arithmetic, use the actual number. It's an app that you would put 2 instead of 0.02. It's 2.2, but in arithmetic, you'd put in 0.022, and there's your dinner. Now, a little behind the scenes here, notice that I give a range so that if you do a little glitch in your keying, this is telling VeggieNet, take any answer between these two boundaries. So you do have a little bit of leeway when you do these for a little bit of a mistake or a rounding error or something like that. Okay? That gives you a little behind the scenes look. Okay. Now we're going to do the whack on this, and we're going to do evaluation. Now this one's an easy, because we're going with a perpetuity right off the bat. So in this one, all we'll do is grow the dividend. We just paid this dividend. And always when you're doing a perpetuity, you take 1 year forward. So in this case, we would want to do the $2.25 and grow it one period at 3.5%. So in other words, we're going to take the $2.25 dividend they just paid, and we're going to times that by the 1 plus the growth rate of 0.035. And that will give us the D1 on the top. Be careful. If I tell you what the dividend is 1 year out, you don't need to do this. You just put the dividend. But if I tell you the dividend that just paid, grow it one period. And then we're going to divide that by the discount rate, which I gave you here as the WACC. So in other words, if you see a problem, it could say the discount rate you'll use is, or if I say the WACC, you're using the same thing. So I'm going to take 0.085, our WACC, minus the growth rate, close the parentheses, and there's your dinner. Yeah, there we go. I was going to say, what the heck is that? Okay, now clear. This is the horizon value problem. It will be one of these. Let me see here. As a matter of fact, I think this one actually has the same number of years as the one on the exam book. Watch carefully what I do here on this. Now, the first thing I'll ask you is find the horizon value. Now, the horizon value is going to be the first year. You take the first year where it's a constant growth. In this case, it's going to be $1.75, 1.75, and you're going to times that. You're going to take it out one more period to D1, in this case D5, 1 plus, what did I say the growth rate was? 0.025, 1 plus 0.025. So that gets you the top for the horizon value. The bottom, you take your discount rate. What did I say it was? 0.075 minus the growth rate. What I 2.5. Close the parentheses, and there's your horizon value. Now, on the quiz, I didn't ask you directly for the horizon value. On the exam, the first answer you give will be find me the horizon value. Then the second one will be find the current value of the stock. To do that with a problem, I showed you how to use the MPV formula, the MPV, rather, app. So you'll put in, for the app, your discount rate, which was 7.5%. Now, for this problem, we're just going to put a negative zero in after the comma. And then we're going to put in the comma, and then we're going to open up the braces and give the positive free cash flows. Now, what I said here, what the heck did I say here? $1.40 will be the first dividend. Wait. Oh, no, I'm sorry. $1.80 for the first year. 1.8. I didn't look at that right. 1.8. And then you'll put in a 80. Then you'll put in your comma. And what did I say for the second year? It'll pay $1.40. Yeah, $1.40. Then $1.50. Comma. And then $1.50. And here's where you watch yourself, for God's sake. In this one, you don't put in the $1.75 because that's embedded in the horizon value. Don't make that mistake. Just put in the next one here, which would be, what was, oh, there's the horizon value. $35.87.5. Close your braces and then close off the app. Now be careful about rounding. In this one, it's a nice clean number. If it's not clean, do at least 4 decimal places. And then you say, there you go. Now the way I've set it up on the final exam, obviously if you screw up the horizon value, you're going to screw up the final answer. The way I can fix that a little bit is that I've calculated how you could screw up the horizon value. But then, so in other words, if you get the horizon value wrong, but you do it right for the second problem, you get partial credit. I figured out how I can do that in VeggieNet. You'll get a little bit of credit if you screw up the horizon value, but you do the second part right with the wrong horizon value. So you will get a little bit of breather on this. So it's not like everything falls apart if you screw up the horizon value. Okay? Yeah.
For what we'll be asked to do, will we always put a negative zero as that second number?
For a stock valuation problem, yes. It's a special way. You're not supposed to use NPV to do this. But if you put in a negative zero for where the initial capital outlay is, it works, and it's a perfect way to do it. The one thing is, again, and I've said this before, if you get an error when you hit, find it, one of two things has happened. One is you forgot to put it in a comma somewhere, or you put a parenthesis instead of a brace. So know that if you hit enter and you get go to or quit or something like that, that means it's either you forgot to put the comma in someplace, a lot of people forget the comma right here, or one of these braces you put in as a parenthesis. Yeah?
So do you always put the horizon value for the last number?
Yes. That's a good point. That last one, right before the comma, is your horizon value. Always. And remember, that replaces the last dividend that you don't put in. The temptation is to put in the 1.75 and then comma the horizon value. That also would get you a mistake, and I've made it enough so that you'll get a little partial credit if you make that mistake. Does that cover everything for it? Now, that was one of the more robust of the quizzes, that one right there. And that sort of gives you an idea that if you know how to do this and you're comfortable with doing it, and I do have a problem in your resources, a couple of problems like this, Actually, it will flow fairly quickly. It's just being able to do it mechanically and not think too much about it while you're doing it. That's where you could make a mistake on this. I've actually tried to do this as a video over the years, showing the steps, and I just can't get the calculator to show as a video at all, even with a screen capture video. But anyway, okay, that's that. Yeah, go ahead. No, you'll find NPV. Is this a go or a no go? Find me the net present value, and find me the internal rate of return. That's what someone asked. I'll put up a problem for that in VeggieNet by tomorrow. So you got a little practice on that.
It's just like those two, like the static valuation. And
that's all you would use NPV for. Yeah. I would think it. Go. Go.
The first one is that, so you said on Monday about the terms, you said to not look up anything online or anything like that. So I forgot where you said to go towards the reference, because I don't want to look at the wrong
one. One of the references, there are references. If you do a Google search, now understand one of the things about Google searches. To get top listing, you are going to have to pay Google. And I know that for a fact because I actually tried to get top listing for my corporation, and it knocked me dead. Academic sites won't pay Google, and so they're down a little ways. But if you write something like liquidity, go down until you find an academic site. They always have a .edu after them. That's where you would find much more reliable information on the web. Or a site like Britannica is really strong, and they're constantly polling us to go in, asking us to go in and find where we see errors. So look for .edus if you're going to look for something that would give you a good definition. Avoid Wikipedia, my God, and also Investopedia also. Go for the academic sites. They're where you get the technical definitions, because we're there to show you how to become professionals. Those other sites, they're there for anyone who wants to wander in and find out something kind of stupid.
Okay, and my second question is that you also said something about how we're going over the scenarios with bonds. Could you go over that?
I sure can. I can give you... I can't remember what quiz it was on where I gave you a bond question, but I can give you one right here if you want one. Well, let me do it here. Tarsec Corp, 5.8%, 2039s. Okay? And then I would say, what is the price if the yield is 5.60%? And then, what is the yield if the... Now, I could give it to you as a quote. If I give it to you as a quote, times by 10, okay? But I'll just give you a price here. If the price is... $975.20. This is pretty much exactly how you're going to see it on the final. Pretty much exactly. just a two-banger on part three, bonds. And then one, what is the price of the yield is? Two, what is the yield if the price is? Now, the first thing you're going to have to do is figure out what the term of the bond is. The term here is 2039 minus 2022, which is a 17-year term. So we're going to go here. It turns off. Why does the calculator turn? Okay, never mind. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. Now, in here, we're going to do it with annual coupons. Like I said, I've made it so that if you use annual or semi-annual, you'll still get full credit for it. So we'll do it annually. 17 years on the bond. Now, the I percent is the yield. Don't let that coupon fool you. It says a percent. That's down here in payments. The I percent is the yield. And I give you the yield as 5.6%. Now, remember, it's an app, so you just key in the percent itself. Now, the price value is what we are trying to find this time. The payment here is the coupon 0.058 times 1,000. So in other words, every year you're going to get a check for $58. Now, for God's sake, a bond has a payoff of $1,000, the face value, the future value. Finally, go down here to the end. Make sure it's on end. Bond end. Go back up here, price value, alpha, solve, and there's your dinner. $1,021.57. Don't put it in as a negative, for heaven's sakes. Just give me the price. That's all there is to it. Now, let's turn it around for the second part of the problem. So our first answer is $1,021.57. And like I said, if you use semi-annual, it would be slightly different from that. I've made the range of answers that are full credit enough so that you get it either way. So this is the simpler one if you just use annual. Now we're going to go here, and it says, in this case, we know the price. The price is, and don't forget to put a negative on the price, negative $975.20. And you go up here to the yield. I percent is yield. We don't know at this time. Alpha solve. Don't clear. Just go in and overwrite numbers. If you clear, you might end up getting an error saying it needed something. 6.04%. There it is. Now, if you get this down so that you can just clock through this something like this, these take you less than a minute for both of these. Decent points for just keying in, knowing where to put what in the calculator. And that's really what it is, just knowing what number goes where. It's just like any math. A formula, as long as you know where the numbers go, it's just arithmetic.
What was the payment calculation again?
You did that right after. The payment calculation in this is going to be the coupon, which is listed in the narrative. And it will be 0.058 and then times the face value of 1,000. If you were to do it semi-annual, you would divide that by 2 and you would multiply n by 2. But if you're just doing straight up annual payments, annual coupons, just that. And don't use the enter. Just move your arrow. Hitting enter can actually once in a while get you some kind of weird stuff going on. Other questions? What else do you have for me? Yeah. Oh. Let me ask you something here. What kind of car do you want?
Ford.
Really? Ford? What, F-150?
Sure.
My man. If you said a Mustang, do you really want a Mustang?
McLaren.
A what?
McLaren.
McLaren?
Yeah.
What the hell is that? Oh, okay. Nice. Oh, sweet. You will go home with a friend if you have that. Holy... Okay, fine. 301,000. I mean, your payments are going to make more, be more than you make in a year, bro. Okay, but let's do it.
What did I make in my
pocket? I mean, definitely make more than I will. Okay, that one took me off guard here. No, what the hell with that? We're going to get you a Ford F-150 a year. Okay. Ford F-150. That's going to be bad enough. Price. Yeah, but that one doesn't have a steering wheel. Let's say 35,000. Okay. Actually, that's not so bad. We're not as bad as I thought. You want to buy... to borrow, let's say $35,000 on a 6-year loan with an APR of 4.69%. What are your monthly payments? What is your balance after 4 years? What is the APR of the loan? What is the effective rate on the loan. Okay, here we go. So we're going to take this calculator, apps, finance, TVM solver. Now you're going to do a 6-year loan with monthly payments, so that's going to be 72 payments. Your APR is 4.69%. Remember to divide that because it'll recalculate 12 times a year. Don't forget to divide by 12. Your price value is going to be the $35,000 you're paying. Don't forget to put in a negative for a PV. Put that FV back to zero. Don't forget to do that, for heaven's sakes. It's on end. Leave it there. And then we're going to go up here. We're going to put it on payment, alpha, solve, $558.65 a month. Now, the reason I do this first is simple. The calculator, when I come back out, second quit. It's going to remember that calculation in there. So when I say apps, finance, I can go down to balance, BAL, here on 9, and I can just tell it. Don't forget to put it in as months. I said 4 years, that's 48 months. You'll still owe about $12,774. It's not hard at all. Where people screw up is they put in the years instead of the months. Yeah.
Can you find balance in the apps?
Yeah, let me do it again. It's right here, apps, finance, go down, it's number 9, BAL. Now the last thing is the effective rate on the loan. All you do for that is say apps, finance. Now you have to go down quite a ways here to find EFF. Where the hell? Oh, there it is. And what you do with this one is you tell it the APR, 4.69, comma, and tell it how many payments there are a year. 12. And there's your answer, 4.79%. This, what I just did here, is exactly what the problem, 3-problem set will look like on the final. Just different, obviously different numbers. But if you got this down, you've nailed another one of the level 3 questions. Just know the mechanics of it. Don't think, just do, okay? Yeah. Say that again.
Do we have to worry about fee overline or skill overline?
No, no. They do that in accounting, but it doesn't always work here. Okay, I'm going to say
just leave it at 1.
Just leave it at 1. Okay, like I said, I'll have a Zoom session. I'll send out a message about when it's going to be on Saturday. But other than that, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.